Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 449 of the JV Club. This is a special episode in that if you are a Max Fund supporter, and I appreciate you so very, very much if you are, you may have already heard this episode because it was previously bonus content for Max Fund 2020. It is my episode with my dear friend and Legend of Korra co-star PJ Byrne, who plays Bolin. It's a wonderful episode. He is a wonderful, beautiful man with his heart full of love, and we thought it might be fun to release this never-before-released to non-Max Fund members episode out to you folks who maybe haven't heard it yet. I hope you enjoy it. I hope everyone is having a safe and pleasant holiday. I know things are back to being pretty nutso in the world, so take care of yourselves and each other, and I'll talk to you soon. I'm going to jump right into it because this is how I do.
Let's go. Jay Barnes.
When you were in high school, I'm obviously making jokes right now about a very hard drug called cocaine.
I did a world record down a 19-foot hallway, end to end, went up my nose in one shot. 19 feet. No one's beat it yet. That is such a lie.
Gross.
That is such a lie.
Gross. No, but I really am curious.
Dude, did you have that high school cocaine life?
I'm curious about you needing to get clean. Was cocaine like a thing for you when you were a young person,
high
school?
No, because, never. Jesus.
Yeah, for me neither. But there are some high schools that you hear about where it's like, wait, what? Like, people were doing cocaine at parties when they were in high school?
That's insane. I lived in suburbia, New Jersey, but, you know, we would go into New York City sometimes when we were in high school. And those kids were just so much faster than us. I mean, we were just drinking our first beers, like, and they were like, doing some stuff. I was like, what? This is crazy. Yeah, the city kids were very fast, and I was not that kid at all. I mean, I was drinking beer, obviously. Obviously. Come on. I even think we had like wine coolers and stuff. Like,
oh, for sure.
Remember those days?
For sure.
The wine
beer,
coolers?
I mean, beer is not great. Like, I mean, I don't know. I remember being like relieved when there would be kind of bad beer that was also kind of flat. Like,
that was somehow more palatable than
the bubbliness of like the bitterness that comes with just the bubbles, you know, the carbonation, that makes it even more bitter
if you're a person who doesn't like
beer.
So there was a kid who looked older, had the best ID, and we, first of all, you're drinking the crappiest, can we curse on this? I won't curse though. You're drinking the crappiest, worst beer because it's cheap. And there was we lived on the border of like, my backyard was essentially like the state of New York. And we used to go into New York to buy from this one place. And it sold a beer. I don't even know if they still make it. And I'll never forget it because I've thrown up so many times from this beer. It was called Golden Anniversary. And it had the gall to put like award-winning beer from like all the festivals like it won.
Oh, no.
But it tasted like cat urine. But you didn't know any different, so you drank it. And I remember, I've always never been good. That's why I really don't drink a ton. I mean, obviously I do drink, but like, because I wake up with horrible hangovers, so I have to be very, like, delicate. But I just remember drinking this beer and always waking up with, like, a knife in my eye. There's, like, I think there's a knife in my eye from Golden Anniversary. I got to look it up to see if they still drink it. And if they do, I thank you, Mr. Golden or Mrs. Golden Anniversary, you know, for the joy you brought me for, like, 3 to 7 hours. But the next day, the horror.
That's a very bold statement to name something after like a one-off event that happens, one could say, at best once a year. The idea that you would name something that's intended for regular consumption
just
as
the
like,
goal. Well, probably, I
like
think the
50th
beer,
wedding anniversary
beer.
Yeah,
I think the beer is so bad, they know like there's going to be one time in 50 years that you will drink it and enjoy it, not barf and not be hungover. So if you can get, if you can keep drinking to get to the golden anniversary, one time pure happiness, God bless you. Because it never happened. It was just a horror show all the time. But we went right back to it. I think it was like $5 a case. I mean, it was that ridiculous. Yeah. It was that crazy. Like, I'll get two cases. This was on me, boys. I'm buying.
Right.
It was incredible.
What you describe is something that a lot of my Jersey friends seem to have experienced, which is that idea of being so close to the city and having those interactions with the city.
Oh, yeah.
But it being such a separate experience from your day to day, like the transformation of, you know, it's not like you like, oh, listen, it was real close to like being in New York. It was like Brooklyn. You know, it's not, there's the divide between suburban New Jersey experience and then going into New York is like
huge.
Huge, right?
My dad worked there for a lot of years because he worked for IBM forever until they kind of went to suburbia, but, you know, they moved all the offices. But growing up in New Jersey, like I idolized New York City. And still to this day, It's like my favorite city. It's not even real to me. It's like, I feel like I'm on a movie set. Like I love when I get to act in New York. To me, that's like, for, I don't know, whatever reason, I'm like, I feel like I made it. When I get to act on the streets of New York City, I'm like, this is real. I'm not on a soundstage in LA faking it. Like you're in New York and it just, it's the greatest feeling in the world because that city to me was just like, that was being in a movie. Just even going to the city was so big and just I couldn't wrap my head around it as a little kid. And for my whole life, it's just such a special place to me.
Yeah. God, that's so – you're such the perfect actor then to do some of the stuff that you've done for like who could Marty Scorsese want to work with more than the guy who's like, when I'm on the streets of New York acting, that's when I know it's real.
No, like, I do. I swear to God, it's real. I mean, there was even one day doing vinyl and I'll never forget with Ray Romano and we took two things. One time we took over a diner and then one time we took over like this famous steakhouse. And then in the diner scene, we were sitting like in the window and you're not allowed to shut down the city, right? In New York, it's crazy. So like regular people, you got to like play the game, but I'll never forget. We're in this window diner in this like just great field diner. And we're making them make us food. Like the diner's like, we'll make the food for the scene. I'm like, this is great. Cause I worship diner food. So I'm eating these amazing eggs. I'm doing this great scene with my buddy Ray Romano, which is like magical, who I love.
Yeah.
And then they're popping all these old time buses coming by and I'm just like, this might be my happiest moment, like acting. This is so fantastic. Yeah. It also just feels so real because there's and it's the work is so much less because first of all, Ray's such a good actor, so he just makes it seamless, but like I'm not imagining anything right now. It's all so genuine and it's just so special. And you're like I just couldn't believe it, like this is the city I worship, and now I get to do the thing I love the most in this city. It was great.
And those moments are so important too with what we do because, you know, kind of what you were saying earlier, like there's, you can sort of get wrapped up in the humdrum of, you know, a lot of downtime or, you know, being someplace on just sort of a hot set that, you know, sort of doesn't feel, it doesn't give you that same sense of imagination and that same sort of childlike wonder at what we get to do. Although I will say, and I'm sure I've said this on the podcast before, but still sometimes like driving onto a studio, especially driving, because so often when we audition, we have to walk on, you know, but even sometimes walking on like that definitely that feeling of, you know, oh, this is where it all happens.
I could definitely
connect with that.
I'll add to that. So when I came to LA, God bless Chris O'Donnell. I was lucky enough when I came to LA to start doing commercials. That's how I really started. Like those are the days where like you got a commercial and like you made a nice number from a commercial. I was like, I can't believe I'm getting paid this much money for one day of work. But at the same time, I wanted to like know the business side of Hollywood, right? So my sister was like best friends with Chris O'Donnell's sister, and his brother-in-law was actually running his company, and Chris also went to Boston College. So I went over to them. I'm like, look, can I just be an intern? You don't have to pay me. And that's the time when Chris had like his big deal. He was like Robin and he had a deal at Warner Brothers. And he had his company called George Street Pictures. I'll never forget this. And so they gave me a script to do coverage on this script. I did the coverage like, oh my God, you know what you're talking about. So they're like, come be our story editor for the company. And I'm like, listen, I came, you know, here to act. They're like, no, come and go as you please. So it was like, I was given such a gift to like, work and development over on a studio lot and at the same time go act and, you know, and just be able to handle both worlds. But what was amazing about that opportunity was I went on to the Warner Brothers lot every day And that, to me, is, like, my favorite lot. It's such a, that's, like, a magical place, just like New York City is to me, and you just feel the history. And I'll never forget this. I always used to walk by the ER soundstage, and I said to myself, I will never walk into that soundstage unless I am invited. So I just, that was like the New York to me. It was like the soundstage of ER, because I always had to pass it every day and I never even poked my head in. And I'll never forget the day, like, I booked ER and I was like really allowed to walk into that set. Like, that was such a special day. And Warner Brothers is, because of that reason, is always such a special place to me.
Yeah. Yeah. When I first came to LA, I had a similar, and by the way, don't you feel like having the sort of experience of seeing the business from any other angle other than acting is so helpful terms of like depersonalizing 100%. The things that are painful, and like just having a sense of the larger picture so that you're not turning everyone in who doesn't hire you into like someone you assume hates you.
But they,
you
know? But that's another thing of not making each audition such a big deal. And I still fight that sometimes too. And you gotta remember, like, you can't bring like that fear into the audition. I mean, I feel like casting people and producers, they smell fear. They're like sharks smell blood. So if you're not, if you're bringing any of that into the audition, I feel like you're dead at arrival.
And you would know dead on arrival because as a professional, you worked on ER.
And
so medically, you would know.
And Final Destination 5.
Oh, that's
where
right.
I was killed twice.
That's right.
Right. And I always make the joke, I was like, I'm not doing the first four. If you get to 5, you call me, but I'm not touching the first four. I'm not going near it. But if you do 5, give me a call. Give me a call. Yeah.
Yeah. We get it.
Yeah.
Listen, you and me, we get it. When I first came down, I feel like you're asking me so much.
I love you.
Well, guess what? It's going to get turned back on you. That spotlight's going to be so hot. You're not even going to be able to know what to do. When I came down, similarly, I had a person I had worked for in San Francisco who connected me with a prop stylist in LA who was working on like a magazine editorial, and he hired me as his assistant, and he had me go to all of the prop and costume houses at the big studios to comb through and like find these specific things we were looking for to dress the set with, and it was exactly what you're describing. Like, it felt so magical.
Oh my God,
and
I felt like
I had imposter syndrome. Like, I can't believe that I'm just waving my ID and someone's letting me park right in front of this warehouse. And then I'm just going in and like poking around.
I'm
like, you know,
because
they just sort of
choices.
Go, yeah,
wow. Yes.
Yeah. They're just like, oh yeah, here, you know, here, help yourself. Like, the glittery stuff is over on aisle 18.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And you're just sort of on your own.
Yes.
And it was such a little kid feeling of like, oh my God. Like, oh, you almost have a feeling of like, what if I just spent the night here? What if I hid and spent? I was like, why would you do that? Like,
this is a movie.
The little
Let's
kid
do
in
this.
You
is this
like,
is
yeah.
Spin-off. This is our night at the museum. Let's spin it off.
Exactly.
Spin it off.
Exactly.
That's great. I didn't know that. That's such a magical experience, too. I love that.
Yeah.
Jumping
well,
in the history.
Because that...
if you look sometimes
exactly.
on, in like, my favorite thing as an actor sometimes, too, is to put on the shoes, right? Then I feel like I'm, I don't know, whatever reason, sometimes putting the shoe on really grounds me into that character. And one of my favorite
things... I wish
things,
that often that didn't mean stilettos for me. That's the only caveat on my end.
I told my wife, I'm like, after doing a show like in the 70s and I had to wear platform shoes, I'm like, you never, ever have to think you have to wear high heels or whatever for me. Because I'm like, this is brutal. This is... Why do people do this? This is brutal.
Yeah.
But what was my point? Anyway, so I love looking at the
shoes. No,
the
you're
shoes,
right, though,
get,
the shoes.
The shoes, but I like looking in the shoes. Sometimes they have like old actors who wore those shoes like stitched in somewhere, and I'm just like, oh my God, the history of these shoes. I love it.
Yeah because people don't realize necessarily that they pull costumes from
forever.
Like, if they're in good shape, then they'll just use the real thing.
Yes.
It's not like someone just a costume quote-unquote designer is not necessarily a person who's drawing a bunch of new patterns to make it look like it's the 70s. It's like, no, if they have if they have a million things from the 70s and they fit like
and here's the other thing, I feel like other actors always are the ones they get to like, yeah, you can take that with you after you wore it. Like, I'm never, for whatever, no one ever says, PJ, take that. They're like, we're gonna need that back from you. So I'm like, I have no gear.
That's because you're doing those period pieces.
Like, we're gonna need that right back. We'll take that.
Yeah.
Right back.
Whereas,
just,
like, occasionally,
even today,
yeah.
Though,
if I'm,
I'm like, God, even I love that jacket. I look really, like, this is well fitted. I'm like, you clearly fit this. I went to a special place to get this jacket and suit fitted to my body. This is the best I've looked in my life. Uh-huh. In my life. And can I just keep this? They're like, we're going to need that back. I'm like, what? Uh-huh. I'm like, I know there's no reshoots. I'm like, no one can afford to do $6 million at this day cost for me to be in the suit again. I promise you. I promise you.
Right.
Sorry, right. Peter, we're going to need that back from you. I'm like, okay.
We're going to need that back. Okay. And in fact, could you get it cleaned for
us? And like, yeah.
If you could go ahead and take
that.
Do you
have a good cleaners that we can trust as well? The overhead here is just too high.
When you would go to New York as a teenager, did you ever see stuff being filmed, or did you just have a sense that like that must be going on?
No,
all the time,
I never, and that would have, my brain would have exploded. I was like, oh my God, that's how it's happening. I never saw it. But you got to remember, also going into New York, I saw that transition. Like I saw Times Square change. You know, it was dicey, and I remember, and a big time. I remember actually speaking of politics, like so. You know, my mom worked in politics, and at that time, you know, she helped all the presidents, you know, who were running for the different, you know, for offices like Dukakis and Mondale and Gary Hart and all that. And then ultimately, like Bill Bradley, she was like his senior advisor and ran for president. But I went to like all the Democratic National Conventions, I think, since Atlanta. Like I didn't miss one. And it was so important for my mom to bring my sister and I to like see this in history and how the power of voting and all that stuff. But I'll never forget the one that when Clinton was there, and it was in New York City, and it was at Madison Square Garden, and I actually worked that one as like a PA. Or I just remember leaving and seeing how, and still like it was dicey around, you know, around, and it was a little scary. But I love that. I mean that just sort of thrill. Of, I like the grime. I like the dirt. I like the realness of it. You know, to me, there's certain spots in New York City now. I'm just like, it breaks my heart that, you know, I'm glad it's safer, but it's just like everything has become a bank or a CVS or like, ugh, gross.
Dwayne Reed. Yeah.
Dwayne Reed. I mean, I love getting cotton swabs for my ears, but I just miss that like character. You know, we're losing so much of that in New York City, and it breaks my heart.
Yeah, yeah. That's so cool about your mom. I don't know that I knew that. Bill Bradley. Bill Bradley from like the
great state of New Jersey. Paper? Senator Bill Bradley. The great state
of
New Jersey.
Or is that a different Bill Bradley?
No,
he wasn't also like the editor of the.
Oh, no. Yeah, different guy. Different. 60 Minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, Bill Bradley played professional basketball and won a championship for the Knicks and then went on to be a senator from the great state of New Jersey.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Tights and Fights is the perfect wrestling podcast from Maximum Fun. And this week, we're speaking to Austin Creed, better known as WWE's Xavier Woods, to find out more about his favorite TV show growing up.
And I would watch Golden Girls. All of the things that I'm obsessed with in my life, all of them have that aspect of teamwork. So Golden Girls is four women, right, in the house. No, their fifth person is their chemistry. That to me is the most important thing, because that's what we're all trying to find.
WWE and G4's Austin Creed on Tights and Fights. Find it on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Were you into sports when you were a kid?
Oh my God, that's all I did. I didn't really act. I got three varsity sports, soccer, basketball, and baseball. I was captain of the basketball team. That tells you how good we are, that you're popping a 5'10 kid as your captain. Tells you how talented we were. But no, basketball, I always think like if I focused on acting as much as I focused and practiced basketball, I would have had an Oscar by now. No question.
But you also, you did the same thing I did, which is that you went a totally different direction and then sort of looped back around to acting. Or maybe in your case, it wasn't even a loop. You like really discovered it.
In college, yeah.
Wasn't like in college.
For sure, yes.
Because you were studying finance, weren't you?
I was finance. I graduated with a finance degree. Do you want to hear that story? Do you want to hear it? I can tell it. Or have I told it times? I feel like I've told it
You know what?
Much.
I don't want to hear it.
You don't deserve it. I don't want to hear it. You don't deserve it. Okay, long story short, here we go. Here's the long and short of it. Sophomore year, I came home from a crazy final session, and I lived in an 8-man, and no one was home yet. And I just started getting back to beer. I started drinking Golden Anniversary. No, God. In college, it was probably Natty Lights. Natty Lights that we would I went to Boston College, so we would like drive across the border to New Hampshire to get the cheaper beer. Anyway, so I started drinking. No one came home. It was like 11, 12, 1. Finally, a roommate at 3 o'clock comes in. My roommate actually from LA, which is funny. He was the only kid from Los Angeles. And he goes, I'm going to audition for a play. I'm like, what? I'm like, no, come drink with me. And like, he's like, no, I'm going to audition for a play. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, all right, look, I'll come with you if you come drink with me after. He's like, yeah, that's fine. But it's like, you need to have a monologue. I'm like, I didn't even know what a monologue was. He's like, you know, you talk for 2 minutes. I'm like, all right, let me just make something up about talking for 2 minutes. He's like, the audition's over in 30 minutes. I'm like, just let me make something up. Obviously, I'm a little buzzed, so I'm a little confident. Anyway, I make up this thing about I'm an old man talking to a shrink. I show up, and they're like, what's the title of the play? And I'm like, Cupcakes in Heaven, which is a lie. I made that up. And they're like, who's the playwright? And that moment, I'm like, what is that? Oh, the player, the author. I'm like, John Ballard. He was my high school history teacher. So from that moment, just make it up. Long story short, I get the part, and he doesn't. And then,
I mean, you're every aspiring, passionate actor's worst nightmare.
Oh yeah, I'm horrible. It's terrible. Well, I'm also getting back to like how confident and loose I was. No fear. There was no fear in this moment. I had nothing to lose.
I'm gonna tell you, people who are listening to this podcast who love you as Bolin on The Legend of Korra must be so happy right now, because that is such a Bolin move. It's such a Bolin move for him to be like, I guess I could act.
Look
what happened to him on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'll eat some noodles and then just go make up a monologue about noodles.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
fine.
I'll get this part.
That's a Tuesday. That's just a random Tuesday. That's how it started.
Right.
And then like faculty saw the play and they're like, come audition for like bigger shows. Like I did Tartuffe. And then this, God bless the power of teachers, especially this one man. He goes, you should double major in this. And I'm like, oh, that will help my public speaking for finance. And like, you know, I figured one day, my route, I think it was like sort of predetermined that like you'll go to finance and then one day you'll go off into politics, into like the family business, if you will. And that'll be your life. And I was like, oh, theater will help me my public speaking. So I double major. And senior year, the banks come on. You get courted by like the banks to work on Wall Street, and I get a job, and I'm like, this is great because I finished most of my finance classes. So literally my senior year, like I knew I had a job waiting for me. I just had to take acting classes and my acting major and like learn about Fresnels and ellipsoidals. And I'm like, this is fantastic. But literally I think it was like in December, this guy, God bless teachers, and I say this all the time, his name is Dr. Houchin, and he was a teacher at Boston College in the theater department. And he came up to me and he's like, PJ, I think you should turn down that job on Wall Street and go to grad school to learn how to be a proper actor. And I go, I think you should stop drinking Jack Daniels, because that is insane. But God bless this man. And this is where he really came through. He filled out my applications for me. Like, he got my recommendations done. He did all like the legwork. He goes,
what a meddler.
Yeah, he's a meddler. And he goes, look, this means nothing. You have to, you know, have a classical monologue and a contemporary monologue. And that sort of will decide if you get into school. But like, the paperwork's done. Here are the three best schools, I think. They only take 10 kids. If you don't get in, I won't say another word. And obviously, I was so touched by like this gesture and him doing all this. I was like, of course I was going to audition. And like, God bless this man. And I got in. And that's how it started. And I got into the theater school at DePaul University in Chicago, which is another – and that's another great experience too, because like Chicago is such a theater town. It reminded me of New York. It's like, you know, it's gritty and it's character actors, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
So do you remember what you did? Obviously, for your contemporary monologue, you just did Cupcakes in Heaven. for your traditional – John Ballard.
Yeah.
I love,
I think it was like
work.
Iago. It was like Iago or something.
Uh-huh.
From Othello. Yeah, it was Iago from Othello, and I was like, other people's money, or so I was like that Danny DeVito monologue from like a movie. Ah. I think I remember. Yeah,
yeah. What I hate to circle back on this.
Circle
but, like,
back,
seriously.
Hey, Jen,
did,
circle
seriously,
back. Circle
did
back.
That or did that not ruin your relationship with your roommate?
Did that? Like, no, he goes. But always now, he's like, if you ever win an award, a big, you have to thank me. I'm like, done. It ruined my relationship with my parents.
Because he was in the program at Boston College, right?
No, he was not. No, he was just did it.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
No, he was just like, I thought it'd be.
I just imagined you like just completely moving into his world and him being like,
oh,
I also would have liked to play Tartuffe, asshole.
Yeah. I would never, actually, I would have consciously been aware of that and not done that. No, he was, all my other roommates were like jocks. He was sort of the one like creative too. I remember he was like, he was like really big on the radio show, the radio at the school. And I think he just wanted to do that. It wasn't like a crazy passion of his, nor was it mine. Gotcha. I think it was just kind of a fun thing that happened. It's like someone, I always feel it's like someone bigger looking down on me. Like if I didn't go to BC, I would not be acting today. I'm so positive of that.
Yeah. Yeah. When you were on all these various sports, were you like
doing
was
cocaine?
It,
was doing,
it
yep.
super competitive? What'd you say?
Doing cocaine? Yeah, for sure, for sure. No, we, yeah, it was it,
forever.
Yeah, no, we. I had a great sports high school. We were really good at soccer and at basketball. We were fine. The year before us, we were awesome. But baseball, still to this day, I'm haunted. We lost in the state finals. In baseball, and like so many kids, like two of the kids got drafted. Like one actually took the draft. This guy named Rob DeBrino. Everybody played in college. I can't believe I was on that team. I would only play like right field here and there because that's how insanely good we were.
Wow.
But yeah, it was intense. But that's it's all I knew. It's like sports, and you know, growing up in you know suburban New Jersey was sort of a big deal. And I love sports, and got you know it was kind of magical.
Were you dating in high school?
Yes. I was dating for sure. I was out there. I was dating. I was a uh-huh. man about town. I was a gentleman caller. I was a gentleman caller. Glass menagerie. Yeah.
I said, did you have like longer term girlfriends, or were you just kind of playing the field?
Yeah, there, I think there
not
were like
in the
longer
literal
ones,
sense,
but
you were
yeah.
also playing the field.
Yeah. There were some long. Sure. Yes. I mean,
I only ask because I can't, it could have gone either way. Like you're the kind of person, like, first of all, you're so lovable and sweet and wonderful. Aww. But you're also very cute that I could see any number of things. Like I could see you being like, oh yes, I had the same girlfriend all 4 years.
Oh no.
Like that
yeah.
one of those like yeah. crazy, or that you're very playful and that you would be like, oh, you know, like I wasn't a heartbreaker, but like, you know, I dated around
yeah.
and like, you know, I wasn't interested in, or that you could be like, oh no, I was like everyone's little brother. Like I couldn't, it could have
oh,
gone
God,
a number of different ways.
That would have been terrible.
I mean?
That would have been terrible. Everyone's little brother. I feel for that guy, whoever that guy is. So God bless him.
Yeah. Yeah, they're out there.
No, I've dated. Yeah, and then and sort of later in college, I dated longer. And then in grad school, longer. And then God, thank God I found my wife. Jesus Christ, thank God. She can put up with me. But who loves sports too? Jamie was the captain of the cheerleading team at Villanova. So she has such a basketball okay. passion. Like I have a huge basketball passion.
Yeah.
So thank God. And also she's an angel. Thank God I found my wife.
She's lovely. What a wonderful family you have.
Oh, I hate them so much. I hate them. What? We're going to keep them. There's another one. I have another child coming, which is just insane to me.
I know.
Pre-pandemic. Who knew? Who knew?
Who?
This child will come
known?
During a pandemic. The child technically could be born, I'm not even joking, on election day. No joke.
Oh, wow.
They're like so primed for that day to be born. That's like right in the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you, how is your family in general kind of reacting to, and we don't have to dig in any way deep into politics at all,
sure.
but in terms of like, if you have a family that is more active in politics or that has, you know, that's kind of woven into the fabric of who they are, is this like, I feel like this year for some people is like, okay, you know what? I've reached my max and now I've actually come down to like not even a dull roar because I just can't go over the top on this or I'll have like a coronary. And then other people are still very much in it and like, you know, just sort of still putting that passion out there. Again, God bless them. Because there is so much kind of ennui happening in the world of politics right now. Is your family in general kind of like amped, or are they like, whew, let's take a breath here?
No, I think when you grow up in that world, you are hyper aware. I think we are constantly like CNN, and it's not a healthy thing, and CNN or MSNBC or BBC or Fox News, I try to watch all of it. I really do, just to see what people are listening to and how mm-hmm. it's playing out in the world. And I think we are very we expose ourselves to a lot, especially my mom, I know for sure, and myself, And it's ugly. And I think it's funny when this all started in my, you know, we're Democrats, so, but we're open to, you know, any and all ideas. It's like, are you fiscally conservative? And Chris Rock makes a great joke. He's like, we all have to, it's like, I hate Democrats. I hate Republicans, independents. Like, each issue should be taken on and you have to do your homework and not just listen to one sort of like megaphone. Right. So I try to,
I guess that doesn't sound like a joke to me, but I do.
No, it's not a joke, but like he makes a joke of, he's like, I am fiscally conservative when it comes to like money, you know, but when it comes to prostitution, I'm liberal, you know, like that's the joke. I think that's, which is funny. And it like, but you get the bigger picture of what he's getting at.
Right.
It's like everything is its own thing. So don't just like, what's the company line? Okay. We are this.
Yes, yeah.
And then you're like, you know, just psychotic about it. And talking, you know, and I have family and friends who are Republicans, and it's funny though, I can listen to Fox News and then I could just, it's just like they're spouting out like talking points for them, and then they spout out the same talking points. I'm like, well, there's this other, and then that just becomes fake news, and it's like, it's tough to have these conversations. And I think what's interesting from my mom's perspective, which, you know, having been in, you know, politics and working in so many various areas of government for so long, she always is of the motto of like, we are a big, you know, we're a big ship, America, and to try to get us off and turn the ship, you need a lot of things to happen, because the bureaucracy of America and like the checks and balances are there. But I think for the first time, and now after 4 years of our current president, like his ability to sort of wipe away and sort of like take out the foundations of certain institutions, I think it bumps her. It bumped her a little bit. And I think what really, the first time that I heard her, she's like very conscious of what's going on, I think is what he's going to do when the election happens. He's already saying the mail, it's a fraud. And he's going to call into question, you know, is this a valid election? And if you deep dive, it's like, what is really our backstop to stop this from happening? You know, this is the great thing about America is like, we hand over the baton year, you know, every 4 years, every 8 years to next president. And if you're in a different party, it's just done seamlessly. Then that what makes America great, you know, truly. If it's going to literally come down to something like, we need to get, you know, 10 more people elected in the House as Democrats and 3 more elected to flip the Senate to really protect us as Democrats. It's like, is that where we're at right now? That it's going to go that far? That, you know, Congress has to put a vote in to decide who's the next president? Like, that's what we've become as a nation. And I think that is sort of given her a sense of pause that we're actually having that conversation, and that we're having conversations of like, how many lawyers do we have spread out across America to make sure that no one's, you know, hindering people from voting, and how many, you know, and how much oversight is there on, you know, in this election. And so that's, I think that's for the first time I've seen her go, wait, this is bigger and a little scarier than anything we've ever had in the past. I mean, you know, we got to remember, we are at a civil war. We are a nation fighting each other, and we still had an election, which, you know, Abraham Lincoln, he really thought he was going to lose, and yet he had that, you know, election. And, you know, we had a civil war against each other, and the mail was still delivered, everybody.
Right.
The mail was still delivered. And if we think that in this moment we're going to speed bump the mail because of a pandemic, it's like, we can do this.
Yeah. Chaos.
No, but that's what, that's the model of, sadly, of our current presidents. Like, look at this dumpster fire. Look at this dumpster fire, and fear, fear, fear. So you know, and then you can't hear the true issues and true facts. Like, there are real facts that can't be spun.
Right.
America.
Yeah.
America.
I mean, I think that's America, everybody. No, just to put a button on that, I think that takeaway for me, especially, you know, what's been going on this year, but something that as I've gotten older has become more and more important to me is also the justice system. And those two things work hand in hand, right? And I think that's what is terrifying about it is also what is so special about it, which is that, you know, if it's working how it's supposed to, it is an evolving, changing, living, breathing thing,
totally.
Right? The law has to be that, because we are evolving. And, you know, in some ways, you know, people feel that we've gotten worse. Some ways people feel we've gotten more ethical, or, you know, however you want to look at that. Ultimately, you know, if everything is the same as it was 300 years ago, that's a problem, because yeah. nothing else is, you know. But at the same time, so, you know, so the things that all the holes that are being poked in everything, you know, when you see like, uh-oh, you can really poke a lot of holes, or you can really undermine, you know, depending on who you are and what the circumstance is, you can find a lot of different ways to disrupt this process. But at the same time, you know, the sort of most optimistic outlook is, well, all that stuff should be pushed and prodded and tested and cut into and sewn back together and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It's very scary. And you hope that it doesn't be, you know, that it's not a too late scenario, or that it's not like we just don't know we don't remember how to do that. Or if we ever, you know, did.
Yeah, no. Look, I think you should always poke holes. I like, you know, Lewis, there's good trouble to be had on every front. You know, whether, because I might not agree with someone else's opinion. He or she might not agree with mine. But I think everyone should sort of push the envelope. But when you get into lying and spinning and then the dirtiness and divisiveness of it, so that you can't come together and have a real conversation, you're just taking yes. spin talking notes.
Yeah, when facts don't matter,
that's a very scary.
That's very scenario. Very, very, very,
and
very scary.
And you know, when it's just a PR team pushing like the world, that's a scary thing. And you know, and sometimes I'm like, I'm not. Wait, if I wear the American flag, does that mean someone thinks now I'm a Republican all of a sudden, or like a red yeah. hat?
I know, it's so unfair.
That to me. And you know, I purposely sometimes wear a red hat and I hang a flag outside. I'm like, no one. You don't. If just because you're a Donald Trump fan, you don't get to hijack the flag from an American. You don't get to hijack yeah. the color red from a hat right. I want to wear. You know what I'm saying? That's how crazy yeah. it's gotten. And one of my buddies like, why are you wearing a red hat? You look like you're a Trump supporter. I'm like, what? And that's from a Democratic friend. I'm like, wait, guys, has it come to this?
Right.
I can't wear a red hat. Like, this is just, that to me, it's like those little things every day that you're like, wow, this is really where we are right now. And we, yeah. and the fact that we just, can't we just, because in any other conversation with one of my best men is a Republican, and like, family, friends, like on every other level, we are completely lovely and normal. I come to you for huge advice. You come to me for massive moments in your life and advice to make gigantic decisions that will change the path of your life, that you come yeah. to me for advice and vice versa.
Yeah.
And yet when it comes to like politics, it is psychotic. And the things I hear spouted, I'm like, that's just what? That's not a real. It's crazy to yeah. me. It's crazy yeah. that we're here now.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, let me ask you this, because I definitely want to respect your time and your family's time.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay.
let me ask you this, just to bring it back around.
Let's bring
again
it back.
For those Korra,
Janet,
for those
bring
Legend
it back.
Of Korra lovers out there.
Oh, that's right. That's what we did together.
And this is maybe like an eye-rollingly didactic question that
good
people are like, no. I want to hear about what it was like to work on the show. But you know, take something like that show, which, you know, we're so excited, of course, is on Netflix and is kind of garnering this new generation of fans, and people
yeah.
are revisiting it from the past and loving it. And a lot of articles that are coming out are talking about how pertinent a lot of the conflicts in the various seasons are with respect to what's happening, not, you know, just in the nation, but in the world right now.
Yes.
And I think we turn to stuff like that because we sort of need this. We feel the sense of like we need a hero, right? Or we need.
Yeah.
What do we do? Because it all feels so messy and complicated. But what would you say to young people who, you know, for example, love Legend of Korra and love The Last Airbender and feel like, how do I bring those values into my action as a person living in America as this November approaches? Like, how do we all become, you know, the fire ferrets? Like, what
right.
do we what do we need to do? Because we can't, you know, necessarily bend earth and water and fire and air. And how do we do our small part to, you know, balance the universe, as it were?
That is a great question, right? First of all, mad props to our creators. I think they're like the most brilliant guys,
yeah,
that have such a good touch and a sort of sense of like what is right and wrong in the world. And they have such an ability to tell a story, to show like what are core values that everyone needs to have, right? And and when everything seems so hopeless, especially now when we're like, you know, there's a pandemic, there's a financial crisis, we have a climate crisis, and we're fighting for social justice. Those are four major issues. Now, you can decide on some level to take on all those issues and have a nervous breakdown. But I think you should be aware, and at any moment you should be able to stand up and fight for what you think is right. But just fundamentally, and I tell this, I say this all the time, and I try to at least live my life this way. If you're just, if you just try to, and in any decision that comes across your plate where you're dealing with life every day, it's like, what is the classy move here? Or what's the classy way to deal with whatever question someone asking me, or whatever choice I have to make with my life, or how to treat other people, or if you feel you were wronged by someone, like how do you respond in a way that is classy? And that will help you in a couple ways. One, you're going to sleep so much better at night, right? If you tell the truth and you treat people with dignity and respect, and you treat people how you want to be treated, like your life, for just the basic fundamentals, you'll go to bed better at night because you won't let it fester in your head. And then when you see a problem in the world that you know wholeheartedly, and you do your homework and you understand what you're saying, and you're not just listening to one voice, and you're getting and you're studying all the details of like, you know, there's a reason. It's not just like, you know, people are kneeling because they hate our troops. Like, no, when they're doing the Pledge of Allegiance, or they're, you know, they're, we're singing the national anthem, people are kneeling. Well,
yeah,
they're kneeling really because, you know, men fought in other countries and in our country, and men and women, and they battled so that we have the right to protest. America was founded. We threw the tea in the ocean to Great Britain because, you know, we taxation without representation. We are a nation of protesters. And that's right. That's what makes America great. And they're kneeling to say we feel there is police brutality afoot, right? That we you know, that we understand that. But when it's spun and it says you're actually kneeling because you don't respect our troops, like that's not the case at all. And for people that are saying that, it's sad, and I hope they would, you know, look a little deeper into that that argument. But
yeah,
I think it's important to do your homework. I think it's important to stand up and do your part to what you feel is right or wrong in this country, whether I agree with you or not. But I think it's important because we can get to the end of this debate as long as we have it in a sensible, calm manner, where we're not like it's just crazed and we're so entrenched in on our side and your side, and we can't have any sort of common ground. And I feel that's found its way into Congress and into the Senate and into politics. And unfortunately, I hope it hasn't found our way into our Supreme Court. You know, it's just like we have to get back to like we're all here for one, like we have to come together, especially in a moment of a pandemic. Like, I can't believe we're not coming together as a nation and working together as one unit. I mean, that's also what makes America great. Like, we can come together and as America and take on anything, and the divisiveness is just so disheartening. And I think if you want to do anything and just start a simple in your own little life, just like be classy in any decision you make, treat everyone you know with dignity and respect, and help any person around you as much as you can, even if it's just going to a neighbor's house to check in on them, or maybe there's someone elderly that's like, do you need anything? Can I help you? And that might spark a conversation, you know, with your neighbor who happens to be older, and you'll find out like, what is their politics and like, what's their story? What's their history? And that helps inform your story of your life and who you want to be and what kind of world do you want to see?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that I love everything you're saying. I think those small actions sometimes.
I love America.
I love that you love America. I love you.
Yes.
I think, you know, that idea of, you know, for the most part, every person we can all relate to just wanting to feel seen and wanting to feel heard. And that, you know, that's whenever that's possible, that's going to be the most genuine way into understanding where someone else is coming from and understanding how maybe you've come to different conclusions about stuff. And I just don't see how that can ever be anything but helpful.
Yeah.
Is to feel like you understand. You know, that doesn't mean you have to agree. And in some cases, obviously, you know, you don't have to. You can actively work to, you know, to try to push something in a different direction if you really feel like there's a dangerous thinking happening. But to not just sort of give up. And that's really hard. It's hard not to feel like, oh, I guess I'll just give up on people that I feel like aren't agreeing with me. Like, you know, we just have to sort of take it one step at a time. And I think you're right. It's those small moments. They may not feel as heroic as this grand gesture that you wish you could do as like a superhero.
Yeah.
But that those small motions really, really, really make a difference when everyone's doing them. And it's this sort of like beautiful, like beehive instead of just one bee doing one extraordinary thing, you know?
And it's as simple as talking to whoever you, like, let's say your parents don't believe in climate change. It's like having that conversation in a calm, you know, manner where we keep talking about it and you're going to teach me what you think and vice versa. You know, it's talking about social justice. It's talking about like, how could we have helped this pandemic? You know, how can we come together as a nation more? It's like, but I think it is important to have those conversations. And I think we find ourselves in whenever politics come up, we're going to shut up because I'm not going to agree with you. You're not going to agree with me. And it's not going to get anywhere. And it's like, well, then we won't get anywhere as a country then if we can't have that conversation at all anymore. Because it just starts creating such vitriol, and the vitriol is really the problem. You know, it's like we need to have honest, fact-filled conversations calmly.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hi, everybody. My name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
We're both doctors and...
Nope, just me.
Okay, well, Sydney's a doctor and I'm a medical enthusiast, and we create Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine.
Every week, I dig through the annals of medical history to bring you the wildest, grossest, sometimes dumbest tales of ways we've tried to treat people throughout history.
And lately, we do a lot of modern fake medicine. Because everything's a disaster, but it's slightly less of a disaster every Friday right here on MaximumFun.org as we bring you Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. And remember,
don't drill a hole in your head.
Here's our last thing that we do for my podcast is I play this little MASH game. MASH stands for mansion, apartment, shack, or house.
Okay, I thought I had to pick one.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is like a game that many of us played as younger people, and some of us still do, myself included. But all you have to do is just give me your answers from the heart on a few different categories, and I'm going to lob at you. And then by the end, we're going to have this kind of alternate universe reality for Peege that he gets to enjoy and imagine is kind of real in a Spidey universe, multi-universe.
This is great. So, I've never played this game. I'm so excited. I have no idea what's happening. Bring it.
Okay. You will live through it, and I think you'll be happy about it.
Okay, cool.
Okay. First, and just rest assured, you will not be able to think of everything that you want to. In 2 hours from now, you're going to be like, oh, why didn't I say blah, blah, blah?
I should have said veal piccata. Damn it.
You know what? Screw this. I'm starting with that category because that is a real category that I use every single time.
Ooh, I love it.
In this alternate reality we're creating for you, you can have three different foods as big and like general category or as very specific to one type of cookie or one type of veal piccata. In this reality, nothing is bad for you. Nothing is bad for the environment. Mm. You can have as much as you want. You'll never get sick, never get fat. It's just like this wonder world of you can have these things in perpetuity with zero ramifications. Three.
Okay, anything from Lilia restaurant in Brooklyn. Can I say, is that too big? Like Malfadina pasta?
No, that's great.
Okay, yeah, Lilia all day. DeFar's pizza. And probably the steak, the porterhouse from Peter Luger's with the Peter Luger sauce.
Great. I love that you gave shout outs to small businesses.
All day. And they're all in New York. I feel I should have said something in LA. There's great food here too, by the way. There's great food here.
You're allowed to love New York. Okay, speaking of loving New York, three places in the world that you would love to have a second home. And we're going to pretend like
we can just teleport places in the world? Three places in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, because you're going to end up with one by the end. You'll end up with one thing from each category.
Okay, Seagirt, New Jersey, like this one house, like there's like a little alcove, like on the, you'll, people will know, it's like on the other side of the tennis courts. It's a, probably like three blocks of houses, like a house on the beach right there. Boom.
Yeah.
I'd like to have a house somewhere like in the Italian Alps somewhere so I can ski. And then I'd like to have, I'd like to buy the property in Sicily that's that my grandfather grew up on.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. I don't want to tell you how I just spelled Sicily. I mean, I know how to spell Sicily, but some bad stuff just happened.
That's fine.
It's fine. Like I started it with a C, like it was Cecily Tyson.
Oh my God. Can a boy be named Sicily, by the way? Can you name a boy Sicily?
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
I mean, I thought I don't about know. That.
Huh, interesting.
I don't make the rules. I invite you to do whatever you want.
Sicily Byrne, get in here, you son of a bitch.
Sicily Byrne.
Yeah. Sounds,
okay.
Yeah.
Next category, three movies that you can jump into and hang out in whenever you want. You're not reliving the plot. You're just in
Hoosiers,
that world.
Hoosiers, my number one
characters.
Film all the time. Hoosiers all day. That's my favorite film forever. I got to say a Star Wars. Let's just go the first one. Why not? Because I love sci-fi. Right. A third film. Jeez Louise, you're really killing me here. I can't believe I can't think of a third film. Hoosiers, Star Wars, and I don't want to go dark movies because it's like I was gonna say Matrix, but I'm like that's too. I would be so fucked up. I would be a mess.
It is such a good movie, though.
I know,
it's
but
true.
I'd be
some
like
of the...
I can't handle this. This is just too.
Yeah.
There's no hope. This is fucking terrible. Am I gonna? I'd be a fucking. Yeah. I'm like, where's the blue, the red pill? Fuck me, man. Fuck. I'd curse a lot. I would curse a lot.
What about something that takes place in like a different era of New York?
No, I know, but New York maybe. But then I'm like, I was like, do I do a period piece? And I'm like, the medicine of the time is terrible. I can't. I was always...
Nothing bad is gonna happen to you. You're in a safety bubble.
Oh, I'm in a safety bubble. Whew.
Yeah. Thank you for treating that like it's a real thing.
No, I can't. I'm already in. Bubble. I'm thinking safety of every movie. I'm already I'm like freaking the fuck out. I'm like, oh God, this is terrible. You know what movie I liked and I was in it, and if this is selfish, I liked just because I'm Italian and you know I always having Sunday suppers at my grandfather's in Patterson. Green Book. I want to.
Oh sure.
I was in that because that when they go back to the. To his house, and then he invites him over, and says like, "That's the world." Because I like having Sunday suppers and friends come over for food with their kids, and I like that.
That's great. Okay, next next question. Three Legend of Korra characters that you
don't
can hang out with.
Oh fuck!
Oh, you know names of the people, the characters on the show.
Who would I want to hang out with? Oh shit! Telephone.
Tell him I'll call him back.
I mean, Korra for you for sure. I mean, our crew is pretty solid. I would.
I know.
Oh my God! Is he hearing the phone? That's who.
I mean,
me.
I can hear it.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Oh God, this is reality, guys. You wanna live with me? This is pandemic life.
Stop ringing.
Hello. No one. I wanted to have.
I mean,
a
I don't know
I wanted
how many...
to prank them back for like I, this phone. I have a landline. Just because I have kids and I want an alarm system, you know? So it's like, but
yep.
It only
oh, yeah.
gets.
I have one too.
Yeah, it only gets like, hey, how you doing today? Good to see you. Like, can I?
Right.
I'm like, we don't need it. But that's, I'm sure you don't. But have you ever thought about, I'm like, have you ever thought about shutting the fuck up? Have you thought about that? But after doing Wolf of Wall Street, I feel for these people because they have to cold call. It's like they have a job and I get it. So I'm just like, all right. You're working.
It's a real, yeah.
You're
okay.
Working.
Oh, sorry. I don't want to cut you off.
Okay, what was it? Yeah,
so,
what was the
do you want to just do Korra, Mako, and Bolin?
Yeah, that's terrible. Is that terrible?
No.
I love
them. Because
they're my family. Like, I want to hang out with them for real.
I know. I agree. Okay, next category. You said you like sci-fi. So let's do three sci-fi kind of worlds that it would be cool. Again, you're totally safe that you can have some kind of interaction with.
Tron?
Oh, thank you. I love you. This is why I love you.
Dude, you know what? Whoever is doing the CBS All Access new Star Trek, I got to give them props.
Yeah.
The new one on, like, they brought it. They did it. I watched sci-fi and, like, $200 million movies and all that stuff and, like, Marvel to check out. Not that the acting is not good, but I don't think about it when I'm watching that. So it's not work for me. It's like I can, like, leave, and it just enjoy the story and the craziness and whatever and the big ideas. And so I want to give that Star Trek most recent one, good for them.
Yeah.
Because it seems like a big budget, as much as you can for a TV show. And I know that costs a lot of money. So I'll do that.
Yeah.
And that girl on the show, the lead girl, I don't know her name.
Mm-hmm.
She's very good. That girl is legit. I mean, because I know you're looking at like little tennis balls and whatever the fuck is going on. And like this girl is in it and she is crying and she is like, holy crap. Like, good for her. Like when I have to cry sometimes, my poor wife, I've killed her in my brain so many times. The horrors my wife has lived through, I've had to make her just to get a tear out of my eye for a moment. Poor Jamie.
That's right. It's a compliment to her.
It's a compliment. And then, okay, I will, look, am I going to live and be cool, but I can do, like, kung fu stuff like The Matrix? Like, all right, let's bring me there.
And be cool, to be cool?
Yeah.
Or The Matrix?
Or should I say a Marvel movie? No, like, give me The Matrix. I like that. You know why? Because when I was at Warner Brothers, the Wachowskis, they were across the hall. Wachowski, how do you say their names? I can't even say their names.
Wachowski.
It was close enough. They were literally across the hall, so that was, like, a big deal in my brain, too. So I kind of idolized them.
That original Matrix is still like the gold standard. It's the gold standard, and it's referenced all the time, and it still feels super fresh. If you watch that movie again, you're like, holy, they really knew what was up.
Oh yeah.
And shout out to Sense8, because that was a show on Netflix of theirs that I truly loved. Okay, next category. All due respect to your beautiful wife. All due respect to your beautiful wife, who you've had to see die many times in your head in order to be able to cry for a show.
That's love.
This is alternate universe. That's love, baby. Three gals or guys. Listen, I'm not going to tell you what to do. That you would love to have like an alternate universe romance with. And this can be like a character from something. It can be like, and you know, it could be somebody from the 1920s. Like you could put
one,
them.
I know one
wherever
all
you
day
want.
Can I just say one? Because I think my wife would be fine with it.
Yeah.
Because, and this is it. This is the only person. Like I was like that. I am struck by her. I'm struck.
Mm-hmm.
From Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of her name right now. Oh my god, because she's just that character to me. The buddy. What's her name? She has short hair, but she was.
Oh, holy shit! She was Kristen Scott Thomas.
Kristen Scott Thomas.
She is.
Well, there's
some
striking to me. Like, oh, who is this?
Wonderful.
And I would be amazing. Because then it would be. Because I always feel like I'm so not cool enough to be around this person, to engage this person. But I was like, she's beautiful, but like so put together and regal.
Yeah.
Like that's it all day. Like she fills up all three slots. She's getting all a three slot. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
I've never felt that way about anyone. Like that was it. I was like, wow, what is that person? That's just
I love how strong a reaction you had to her. I also was
who was yours?
Like, kind of obsessed with her in that movie.
So she's
like,
on your list. She's on your list as well.
She is now. I hadn't thought about it in a
get
minute, but
list.
She is now.
That's a great movie. Four Weddings and a Funeral as well. Someone needs to. I love that kind of movie.
Yeah, someone needs to what? Don't make them redo it.
No, I know. That's why I was like, something similar, but don't do that. That's why I stopped myself. Yeah. I was like, don't do that movie.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. I'm proud of you. Okay, next category. There's only two more. We're going to get through this. We're going to let you go back to your family.
That's okay. They love you too.
Next category is going to be three sports that you are amazing
basketball.
At in this alternate universe.
Okay, basketball.
Gray.
Skiing.
Okay.
I guess surfing. I'd love to be sick at surfing.
Sick.
And
then three. I got to do one final thing for the LOK fans, I think. Let's say three.
Lava bending.
Three things.
Lava bending. Sorry.
Okay. Well, there you go. No, I'm going to take it.
Take it.
I'm going to take it. Lava bending.
Lava is just fucking cool. That's just like, don't fuck with me. I will fucking burn you. And then you will be encapsulated in that rock forever. Yeah. Also, I just love that I still feel like, I'm like, do I have that power? Is that real? It was so set up. It's like, is he going to have it? Like, I still kind of question if I can do it. And I think if I know I can do it, I'm still like, I hope it happens this time, one more time. Like, it wasn't taken away. They didn't. That's the power of our creators, that they
I know.
They mind-icked my brain so much. even the audience, that I, as a character, I still don't know if I have it.
Yeah.
Well. I gotta fly. Everybody wants to fly, right?
Yeah.
And I know. You were able to talk to, like, the other side, like the ghosts and stuff.
That's what I was gonna
what
say.
What the fuck?
That's so funny. Of all the things that were gonna be coming up, for some reason I was like, I was just thinking about that. The ability to communicate with
deal.
Past avatars and with the spirit world.
I like
Love
that.
It. Okay.
I like that.
I that's so funny because I really, that's exactly all I was thinking. I was like, I kind of wish he'll say, but he won't say this. And then you did say it.
Yeah. How many times did I let you down? We've had like 7 of these. I made you happy once. You're like, good for him.
I'm finally slightly satisfied.
Okay.
The rest of this is garbage. Okay.
Thank you.
Give me a number between 1 and 7.
7 all day. I got married on 7/7/7. That's when I got married, July 7th, 07.
Oh, really?
The day everybody in the world in history wanted to get married. People were booking out places, and they didn't even have a significant other. That's how crazed people
Wait,
were.
Wait, really?
Oh, there was a place, a venue we tried to get, and they're like, well, what's the couple? Like, well, it's just a woman now. She thinks she'll fall in love with someone by then. I was like, wait, what?
No.
Oh.
No, no, no.
Oh, yes. But that's why my wife was like, don't worry about it, because she's also, you know, she does huge parties for nonprofits. She's like, it doesn't matter. I'm gonna find a sick venue and we'll make it. I can do it on in a tree and it'll be amazing. You know?
Where did you end up doing
we
it?
We end amazing. She crushed it. So the ferry terminal we met in Hoboken, New Jersey. My wife and I at a bar called Madison's, which our first daughter's named Madison.
That's your daughter.
Yeah, we met. And I always make the joke. Good thing we'd meet at Hooters. That's my daughter, Hooter. Love her so much. But anyway, so like the town next to it was Weehawken, and they had just built a new ferry terminal, and there was nothing in it yet. So it was amazing. So we were in this ferry terminal looking at New York City, and then at midnight, after the party was over, we had a ferry pull up, and like the after party was on a ferry that like took us around the Statue of Liberty in New York. It was crazy. It was crazy.
How wonderful.
We did that for you, Janet. It was for you.
We hadn't met, but I would have been the speaker of honor.
Right.
I probably would have married you, too.
This feels right. This feels right for Janet Varney, a woman I've never quite met yet, but she'll love
That's
it.
That's right.
She will love this.
That's right. So. Okay, I have the results of your MASH that I was doing while you were talking.
How do you decide that, though? You just go, this is a 3, 2, 1? Like, how do you...
Yeah, it's kind of an it's like a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Then you cross it out, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I move at such a clip, though, that there's a certain amount of, like, if I skip something, that's the universe
telling
me. Oh, yeah,
you're like a savant. This is amazing.
That I've,
I'm
meant to. So,
it's like
Mad
Libs a little bit, so I like this.
It is definitely
Madison and Libby, like Mad Lib. That's what they are.
Oh, that's. Please tell me that you realize that after the fact, and that's reverse engineering and not a reason to name someone.
100%. That just happened. Yeah, I'm not that amazing. That's why I want to ask before, like, because we have to name our son. So it's like, you know, the clock is ticking here. I'm like, Sicily. That's interesting.
Well, I'll tell you something.
Say it.
It wouldn't be inappropriate because in this MASH game, you have that property Sicily, Italy.
Yes, come on down. Let's make a deal.
You also, listen, it's not a mansion, a shack, or a house. It's an apartment. So that's just part of, that's built into the game.
Oh, yeah,
you did end up with an apartment. So you have an apartment in Sicily, but you also own
a
bunch
of land.
Oh, it's
an apartment?
I don't
even, wait a minute. I have an apartment.
listen. I don't know. It could be that you have one apartment and then elsewhere on the same property you have like all this other stuff.
I'm that American who came over and built an apartment building in beautiful city. Like that son of a bitch. American. Sons of bitches. All right. Well, all right.
That's exactly right.
I just pissed off my relatives and all of Sicily. Great. I love this game.
I'm so sorry.
I love this
but
game.
But you can't. Yeah. You cannot argue
you can't.
With
That's
the
game.
Magic
That's
of this game.
Happened.
You just can't. You just can't.
Talk about being classy. Throw
also,
that out the window.
Yeah, absolutely. We're class free here. Yeah. You also have unlimited food from Lilia in Brooklyn. Lilia is so happy.
That's great. My friends own that place. And the chef.
Nice.
Yeah, that's great.
Outstanding. Well, I know that your alternate universe romantic partner, Kristen Scott Thomas, surprise, surprise,
oh my God, I got her. Yes!
is also
that's
a big
what happens
fan.
When you do a oneer, can't lose that one.
I assume on the property in Sicily, you probably have a basketball court because you are a virtuoso at basketball.
That's good. Okay, at least I'm bringing a dope court. Maybe the apartment building is for other basketball savants to come play and train. in Italy with me. That's fine. That's okay. All right, I'm okay with it. It's getting
better.
What a
weird, great world.
It's getting better.
What a weird, great world. You also have the ability to jump into the most recent Star Trek when you want to get away into a sci-fi world.
There we go. Okay.
Or, and this is going to really piss off people who feel it's one or the other, you also can go into Star Wars. Let the battle for the best star blank begin.
I feel like I let some people down by saying some very like on the nose stuff, like very the big ones. But that's what the pandemic has brought me, dude. Disney Plus was available, and so was CBS All Access. So it's present. It's right. It's what I revisited recently. So there you go.
I'm very comfortable with it. I'm very comfortable with
it.
You should be too.
Don't judge me.
And then lastly, we'll throw out our two good newses from the kind of Legend of Korra world, which is that you are hanging with your bro, Mako, and you're a lava bender.
Great. Oh.
So well played. Well
My
played.
My brother. Dave, I miss him. Yeah. I miss us all being together.
I know. I do too.
Are we going to do another one? Too. Should we make a call? Let's make a call and keep it going.
I mean, I think we'll just make a few calls. I mean, I might take a few calls, but God knows we have that kind of power.
I have that power. Look, the boys are available. They walked away from the Netflix Avatar thing, so
don't I know
Let's
it?
Let's make a call. Don't I know Let's it? Make a call.
We love those.
I
boys.
Mean, aren't they like so baller to be like my right? This is feels wrong, and I'm not doing it.
They're just they're classy.
They're classy. I'm telling you, these are the guys.
Because the way they talked about it was very classy.
Oh,
yeah,
so
they're great.
Good. I'm telling you, they're so. They're like, we wish it nothing but the best, but we will not be part of it.
Show business hard, guys. Show business hard. That's a good takeaway for you. I love you. Thank you.
Oh my God,
so
I love you
much
so much.
For doing
I miss
the podcast.
You. You're my sister.
This
I
was
love
such
you.
A pleasure.
No, you're,
I know.
You're my bestie.
Well, listen, the hope is to just keep pulling you into things and you pull me into things and then we'll keep doing stuff together.
I have no problems with any of that. This is such a bizarre thing because I feel like we never talk where it's just so one-sided about me. So that was a bizarre. I want to know about more about you. How you doing? How you feeling? How's life? How's things?
I guess you got to start a podcast.
Yes, I'm starting it. Well, you can produce it. You're my, you start your empire.
That's right.
I'm one of your like people that you... That has its own podcast, and I'm part of the Janet Varney empire, the JV empire.
That's right. I'm going to lift you up from
That'd
your sad
I'll
place of being
Let's
in everything that's ever on.
God, stop it. Hey, listen, I got
no
I
one
got
could
these
deserve
three
it more.
Kids. I got three. I got to pay for school.
That's right.
Oh,
that's right.
Christ.
That's right. Get those coins in the bank. 50-50 chance. 50-50 chance.
Well, this is now my new favorite show in the history of podcasts. Thank you for letting me be a part of it.
Oh,
you're the
you
best. You're
much.
So
thank
good
you,
at this.
Everyone.
You're such a great. You're great at this.
Oh, darling.
Really, truly.
Where can people find you on social media, please? Please.
On social media, you can find me at PJ_Byrne, BYRNE, on Instagram. That's really it.
Okay, great.
I do Twitter. I feel like it's, for some reason, it's locked at 12,002 people for the last 36 years. Like, it cannot move. Like, I don't think that's counting right. It's just bizarre to me. It's bizarre. But Instagram seems to be going up. So.
Okay, there you go. I'm horrible on both.
You're doing great.
I need
Listen,
to do
don't
better.
You do that. You're doing great.
All right.
You're doing
don't you
great.
Do that. Don't you do that. All right, sweetie, I will let you go. All of you listening to this podcast episode, we adore you. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching the show.
Yes.
And I will talk to you next time on the podcast.
I'm going to send a big hug to you and everyone whose ears are being tingled by our voices.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say tingled?
Yeah, we are real
tinkled.
Ear tinglers.
Because I say tinkle to my kids. I can't believe I just said, for everyone's ears are being tinkled. That's disgusting. Oh, God.
And now for your golden anniversary,
oh, God,
I'm going to tinkle
back.
On your ears.
You brought it back. Good job. That's a pro. All right, I love you. I love everybody listening.
I love you.
Bye, babe.
Goodbye, everyone. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi. On skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should. MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned. Audience supported.